After we finish tonight, you will never ever daven the same. We'll have to figure this out somehow. Can I leave it here? Is this good? On here is good? Okay. Where does the word tefillah come from? We use that all the time, and we know that tefillah means davening, means prayer. But the Maral writes something very interesting. We all know the very dramatic story and the sad story when Yaakov Avinu thought that his son Yosef was dead, where his son was, and he had given up on him. And then finally he hears that Yosef is actually alive. And he comes down to Mitzrayim, and near the end of his life he's recapping what happened. And he says to Yosef, the Pasuk tells us in Bereishis Memches, Pasuk Yud Aleph, Vayomer Yisrael el Yosef. Yisrael says to Yosef, which is Yaakov, of course, is talking to Yosef, Ro'oi fonecha, seeing your face, loy filolti. What does the word filolti mean? Rashi says, loy milani libi lachshav machshava. I never even gave it a thought that I would see you. Says the Maral, the word filolti means a thought process. And that's what tefillah is. Tefillah really is a thought process. Knowing what you're talking about and to who you're talking to. Now, of course, if somebody doesn't know the meaning of the words, say the words of the davening, there's merit to that as well. But real tefillah is knowing exactly what you're talking about. And when you talk to Hashem and you understand the meanings of the words and the intent, then that's the real connection. That's what tefillah is all about. And that's what I would like to talk about tonight. I'm a very big believer in everybody davening in their own siddur. In other words, not just to come to take a siddur off the shelf and daven at 80 miles an hour. Because most of the time you're not going to be concentrating on what you're talking about. But when a person has their own siddur and they underline those things that they have learned about and those expressions that mean something to them, your siddur becomes your best friend. Your siddur becomes that instrument that talks to you morning, noon, and night. And I want to give you some examples. I remember a number of years ago, I had the schus to be the guest speaker at a Hatzalah dinner in Muncie. And we can understand that at a Hatzalah dinner, those fellows that go out on any time during the day, no matter what, they'll go out in the middle of the night, they'll go out in the middle of a Seder of Pesach, and some of them will even go out during their own family Simcha if they're the closest one to the call. So I can understand that at a Hatzalah dinner, three or four of these guys were honored. And after they were honored and they spoke, I thought I was going to be the next speaker. But they introduced somebody else before me. And this guy got up, a trim, good-looking fellow, and the first words out of his mouth were so shocking, nobody could believe he was serious. And he said, Rabbi said, take a look at me. I want you to know that I went through Tchiyas HaMesim. I am a result of Tchiyas HaMesim. And he told this story. He said one night about a year and a half earlier, he was sitting in the living room with his wife and suddenly he had a terrible chest pain. And he said to his wife, I'm afraid I'm having a heart attack, and he collapsed on the floor. And she started yelling and screaming, and of course she called Hatzalah. The units came in a few minutes. The first unit came, they couldn't do anything for him. They couldn't revive him. The second unit came and they couldn't revive him. And the third unit came and they said, we must rush him to a hospital right away. And they said to her, listen, you stay here, you stay till him, you do what you have to do, and we'll do what we have to do. And she said, absolutely not. I'm not leaving my husband. I'm going in the ambulance. You got to find a place for me. And as they were in the ambulance, on the way to the hospital, this third group, they revived him. And then he was in the hospital. Of course, he had medications and therapy, a bracha from a Rebbe, but he said, here I am. And he said, you might wonder about that first expression that I used, that I'm the result of Tchiyas HaMesim. He said, I want to show you something. And tonight, those of you who have a ritual at home, I'm sure that they have them here in the Beis Medrash. You take a look at the first ritual in Masechet Tainis. The very first ritual. Ritual was one of the commentaries who lived, who was one of the Rishonim in the time of Rashi and the Ramban and the Rif. And he writes like this. That meant the first ritva, you'll take a look at it. He says, many people make a mistake. And when they daven Shemoneh Esrei and they use the word Mechayim Mesim, they think that it's talking about when Hashem is going to revive those who passed away. Parents, great-grandparents. He said, no, let me tell you what it really means. He said, the three times in the Shemoneh Esrei, right in the beginning, does it say the words Mechayim Esim? The first one, Ata Gibel Elam Hashem Mechayim Esim Ata Hashem, you are being Mechayim Esim every day. What does that mean? He says that's the fact that we all have food, the fact that it rains, and if anyone here, would not have food for 5 days, they'd be dead. We would all be dead if we didn't have food for 5 days. Nobody could last that. So the fact that Hashem allows food to grow and produce to be produced, and we can all have food, that's the first thing that we're talking about in Ata Gibel Yelam Hashem Mechayim Esim. The second one, listen what the Ritva says. The second one, which is near the word Samech Noiflim and Rorefei Cholim. We say Mechal Kechayim Bechesed, Mechayim Esim, Berachman Rabim, Samech Noiflim, Rorefei Cholim. He says, the second one is Al Bnei Adam. That's of those people, Shekorov Kitzem Lamoves. We all know people like that. They were on the threshold of death. And then, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Marech Yimehem, Hashem lengthened their days, V'yishlach Dvarav Yerpoim, he sent the right messenger, he sent his word, and the fellow was healed. That's the second Tchias HaMesim. That's what he was talking about himself. The third one is Lashon Osid V'neman Atolihach Yais Mesim. You're going to redeem and make come alive once again those who died. So when it says Mechayim Esim, it's not talking about the future, it's talking about today. Mechayim Esim, every single one of us, the fact that we have food, that's reviving the dead, because we'd be dead without food. And the second one is those people that are Chas V'Shalom holding near the end of life. And Hashem sends a cure, and Hashem sends the right shliach. That's why it's Samech Noifim V'Roif HaChoylim U'Matar Asurim. And then the third one is V'Nemanata Lihach Yis Mesim. So in my Siddur, I have those three, Tchias HaMesim, Mechayim Esim, underlined. But if you're davening at 80 miles an hour, and in a Siddur that's not yours, that you don't have it highlighted or underlined, you don't even realize that you're saying three different types of Tchias HaMesim. All we're thinking is about what the future is. So when a person wants to really think about what they're davening, they have to use a Siddur that they could write in so that every time the Siddur is talking to them. Now, I'll tell you an interesting story. I remember I was once in Eretz Yisrael in Bnei Brak many, many years ago, and there was a tremendous Talmud Chacham. His name was Rav Schulzinger. And Rav Yankov Galinsky had told me, you know, he was very close to Rav Cheskel Abramsky, who was the Slabodka Rosh Yeshiva. Now, a great question, David Sharon and Sam and his wife, we were talking about, when you go to an Adam Gadol, what do you ask an Adam Gadol? If you ever find out that an Adam Gadol was close to some other great tzaddik, this is a great question to ask. Tell me a story about that Gadol that nobody knows. I said that to Rav Nevensal, should live and be well. He was very close to Rav Shlomo Zalman. He told me a great story. It's not for now. And if you want, maybe after Meir, if we have time, I'll tell you a great story. But you got to be a mathematics whiz to understand this story that I asked Rav David Feinstein. Tell me a story about Rav Moshe that nobody knows. But I myself had to hear it four times. It was a mathematical genius of an answer of Rav Moshe. Maybe we'll talk about it afterwards. So I said to Rav Schulzinger, tell me a story about Rav Chatzkel that nobody knows, Rav Chatzkel Abramsky. He said, I'll tell you. And he said like this. He said, Rav Chatzkel Abramsky lived in Bayit Vagan. And his next door neighbor was the Amshinov Rebbe. And it happened one time that the Amshinov Rebbe was very sick and he needed a blood transfusion. So somebody goes over to Rav Chatzkel Abramsky and says, Rebbe, you know, we got to daven for the Rebbe, for the Amshinov Rebbe, because he needs a blood transfusion. He's very sick. He said, oh, he should have a refuah shleima. He said, but you should know, I daven every day that I shouldn't need a blood transfusion. He said, every day you daven that you don't need a blood transfusion? What are you talking about? Where do you daven that? Now listen to this. You won't believe it. In Rachim, it says like this. Oh, al tatzricheinu. Hashem, make it that we don't need. Hashem, okay, loyli day matnas. We shouldn't need the present of basar flesh. We shouldn't need a kidney transplant or a lung transplant or a heart transplant or dom, a transfusion. Imagine that's how he's touching. Loyli day matnas. We shouldn't have to come on the present of basar, a transplant, which is skin and flesh, or dom, or a blood transfusion. I couldn't believe he was serious. I came back to America. I went to my Rebbe, Rav David Cohn. I said, Rav David, is he serious? That's really what this means? He said, of course not. The simple meaning is, we shouldn't have to come on to other people. But the Chazal The holy Chazal, they were kaveya, means they established words of tefillah that could have double and triple meaning. We have a chazan sitting right there. He can tell you that when you daven up front and you're thinking of the words, sometimes you're going to come up with a different pshat. And that's acceptable as well. So really, de matnas bos of adam, the simple meaning is that you shouldn't have to come onto human beings. But the deeper meaning, and I have it underlined in my siddur, when I bench with my siddur, I see matnas bos of adam. So that's also a tefillah. And I'll show you something else. It's amazing. Every morning we say to Hashem, we give him a compliment. The compliment is, in the Halalukos, Haroife l'shvurei lev, that Hashem is the one who heals the brokenhearted. That's a tremendous compliment on someone. There's so many people that are so broken today for so many reasons, so many challenges in life. Family, finances, health, shidduchim, marriage, kids. There's so many problems. And people go around feeling terrible and awful. Imagine if you were able to go over to a person, put your arm around them, and make them feel special. That's God's characteristic. Haroife l'shvurei lev heals the brokenhearted. So I once heard a Chassidish Rebbe say something fabulous. He said, what are the first letters of those three words? Haroife l'shvurei lev. Hey, lamed, lamed. That's hallel. That's the greatest praise you could say on anyone. So of course, in my siddur, I have that underlined. Because when I finish davening, I want to remember I'm going out in the world. And a person has to know the world is not about you. It's about what you could do for somebody else. Haroife l'shvurei lev is hallel. That's a praise. We didn't even know it says there. But now that we have it underlined, not only do we know the characteristic of Hashem, but we know that's the greatest praise that a person can do. Now I want to tell you now something that's going to change forever, forever, the way you daven Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. There is a word in Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur davening that we say so many times, and it almost has no meaning. And that word is Uvachein. All of you will remember that it says like this, Uvachein tein pachtecha, and Hashem, and in this manner, give your awe. Alko masecha, make sure that the whole world is in awe of you. We say to Hashem, Uvachein yizkadesh shimcha Hashem alakenu, and in this manner your name shall become holy, Ayisrael amecha, on the Jewish nation. Uvachein tzadikim yiru v'smachu, and in this manner the tzadikim should be happy and be respectful. So I ask you, if it didn't say Uvachein, it would also be good. Yizkadesh shimcha Hashem alakenu, alko Ayisrael amecha, make your name holy on the Jewish nation. Give awe and fear on all your creation. What is Uvachein? So I remember a number of years ago when we took a trip to Spain and we were talking about the Jews who were expelled from Spain, the expulsion. But there were many Jews who decided not to leave. So publicly, they acted as Christians, but privately, they acted as Jews. Now there's a word for those Jews. I'm going to use it only once. You should never, ever use this word because it is a terrible, derogatory word, and that word is Marano. That word, if you look it up in the Spanish dictionary, means pig. And that's what the Spaniards called the Jews. So you should never use that word about those Jews who were yidden in private. What's the proper word? Conversos. Conversos, because they converted to Catholicism, but in private, they still remained Jews. Now, every one of us needs a hero. Every one of us needs somebody that we look up to, that we want to be like, that sets a standard for what we want to become. Who was the converso's hero? Who was the greatest converso in the history of Judaism? If anybody can think, you know who it was? Esther Amalka, right? Why? Here she was, the Persian queen, and in public, nobody knew who she was. In private, she acted like a Yid. But otherwise, in public, she was a Persian queen. Now, we all know the story. Haman wants to kill the Jews, and Mordechai finds out about it. So Mordechai sends a message to Esther, now you've got to reveal who you really are. You've got to tell Ahasuerus that you're a Jew, because you've got to save us. Otherwise, Haman's going to kill all of us. And what does she say? She says, oh no, I can't go into the king. You go into the king, anybody who goes into the king without permission is going to get killed. I can't go in. So now, Mordechai tells her back through a messenger, you got to go in, because if you don't go in, somebody else is going to do it. Now's the time to save the Jews. You must go in. This is the opportunity. So listen what she says. Leich kenoises kol ha-Yehudim. It's an Esther Dalad design. Leich kenoises kol ha-Yehudim. Gather all the Jews. V'shushan v'tzumo alai. And make sure that they fast v'al toichlu v'al tishu shleishas yom alai l'v'yayim. That they shouldn't eat for 3 days. Gam aniv v'naroisai otum kein. Me and my servants, we are also going to fast. And you know what the next word is? Uvachain. Ovayal ha-melech. Uvachain. That's where the Vachain comes from. She is going into the king. She's afraid to go into the king. That's what the Avud Ram says. That's what we're saying on Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur. Just like she was afraid to go into the king. And we know that every time when it says HaMelech in the Megillah, it's a reference to HaMelech Malchei HaMelechim to Hashem. She was afraid to go into the king because who knows what he's going to do to her. When we stand Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, we're saying Vachain, that's Esther's Vachain. Because we're also afraid to go into the king. Who knows what we did last year? Did we really learn as much as we should have? Did we really daven as much as we should have? Did we do as much chesed? So how are we going into the king? We're terrified. Just like she was afraid to go into the king, we're afraid. Oh, now let's watch something amazing. What happens when she goes into the king? Oh, she finds favor in the king's eyes. And not only that, he gives her the Shavrat Hazov, he gives her the golden scepter, and then he says, Ad Chatzi HaMalchus. You could have whatever you want. Half the kingdom, it's all yours. We understand something brilliant that the Arizal said. That was so puzzling. The Arizal says, they asked him, what is Yom Kippur? He said, it's Yom Kippurim. What do you mean? Yom Kippur is like Purim? Yom Kippurim is like Purim? It's totally the opposite. Purim is singing, dancing, drinking, eating. Yom Kippur is serious. Fasting in shul the whole day. No, you know what it means? Just like the Esther was afraid to go into the king. But she got answered, and she got everything that she wanted. We want Yom Kippur to be Yom Kippur. We want that Yom Kippur should be like Purim, just like we were afraid to go into the king, and we're going to get answered just like Esther did. That's a different meaning. That's Yom Kippurim. So now, what I would like to give everybody homework tonight, before you go to sleep, take out your mazer. And underline in Shacharis, Mincha, Ma'ariv, Musaf, Nila, every time it says Uvachain. It's going to take you a few minutes. But now, Uvachain doesn't become an innocuous word that doesn't mean anything. It's the most important word in the Davnik. Because it's not our Uvachain, it's Esther's Uvachain. And it's a total different meaning. Uvachain, Ovayal HaMelech. That's what Rosh Hashanah is. That's what Yom Kippur is all about. That's what Aseres Yemei Tshuva is about. Coming in with trepidation, but confidence. Confidence, because just like Esther was answered, Be'ezus Hashem will be answered L'toiv. And that's Esther's V'chein. But again, all these years that we've been saying of V'chein, we don't understand the meaning. The meaning doesn't seem powerful. The meaning doesn't seem important. But all of a sudden, this year, it's going to be very important. Because we underline it, and you stop for a minute, and you pause. Hashem, I understand that I might not deserve to come into you, to come before you. But make us like Esther. Just like Esther got answered by the king, we too should be answered by the king. During the Second World War, there was a very great tzaddik. His name was the Skolena Rebbe, Rabbi Eliezer Zisha, Portugal. And what he did in Romania, it's legendary. Him and his wife, they had throughout the war more than 400 young men and women at different times in their home. They clothed them, they fed them, and they took care of them, and they helped get them visas to get out of the country if they could. Why did they do it? Because if the boys would go to the army, that would be the end of the Yiddishkeit. And if the girls were caught by the police, who knows what could happen? And they could be sent to concentration camps. So this was going on for a while. And then somebody snitched on the Rebbe. Somebody went to the authorities and said that the Rebbe's hiding these young men and women. Of course, the authorities, they were only too happy to find that the Rebbe would do that. So they went and they checked and they saw it. That's what it was. So they arrested him and they told him they're going to put him in jail. They put him in solitary confinement. They told him he's going to be here until he rots to death. They took away his yarmulke. They took away his glasses. And those of us who wear glasses know that without glasses, you're totally disoriented. So, and they left him there. Now, every day before this, The Sekalenin Rebbe, when he davened Shemoneh Esrei, they say that it took him more than 3/4 of an hour to daven Shemoneh Esrei. The Baal Tefila obviously never waited for him. He had his own way of davening, very slow with tremendous kavanah. Now that he was in jail, and he was going to be there until he rotted, so of course, what else was he going to do? Of course he could daven even slower. How's he going to daven without a yarmulke? So he took his jacket, he put it over his head, and that's how he davened. And he was davening very slow and thinking of every word. And then he came to Baruch Sha'amar. And he started saying Baruch Sha'amar, and all of a sudden he had a question. He got so upset with himself. How in the world could I have been davening all these years Baruch Sha'amar and I never thought of this question? And the question was, everything in Baruch Sha'amar is a mantra that's positive. Baruch Sha'amar v'ayolam, Hashem said there should be a world, and there was a world. Baruch Merachim ala Oretz, Merachim ala Brias, Hashem has compassion on society. Mishalim Sochotev L'Reyev, He pays good reward to those who fear and respect Him. Everything is positive. And then it says, Baruch Goyzer u'makayim. Hashem makes a Gzeirah, Gzeirah is an evil decree, and He fulfills it. That's terrible. Now, we understand that sometimes Hashem has to make a Gzeirah for whatever reason. But how does that fit into the mantra of Baruch Sha'amar? Everything is positive. He got so angry at himself that he said, Hashem, do not let me out of here until I figure this out. And he kept on saying the words, Goyzer Makayim Baruch, Goyzer Makayim, Goyzer Makayim. What does it mean? And then he came up with something that's mamish genius. He said, Umakayim doesn't only mean to fulfill. Umakayim comes from the word kiyum, to have an existence, to be able to make it through that difficult time. Oh, that's a tremendous thing. Baruch Goyzer. Hashem is blessed because sometimes He has to make a gzeira. But umakayim, He gives us kiyum, He gives us the strength to go through it. And how many times has it happened? We go through certain things in life and we feel, how are we going to get out of this mess? How are we going to exist through this? How can we go through this? But when you see every morning and you underline Baruch Goyzer Makayim, then a person knows that if Hashem made a gzeirah on a certain person for whatever reason, they're going to have the strength. They're going to make it. They're not going to be broken all the way. They're going to be able to come back. And that's why I have it underlined in my siddur. And that's why everybody should underline it. Because we all go through crises in life. And a person wants to get chizuk when you daven in that siddur and you say Baruch Sha'amar, Hashem, the Chazal, they're talking to you. Don't worry, there's a gzeira, but you're going to be able to make it through. Now, I want to tell you a story. I may have told this a number of years ago here, but I still want to tell it because it's very, very personal. It's very poignant. And this story literally changed me since it happened till this very day. Most of us here, except for this little tzaddik up front here, went through 9/11, right? You know what 9/11 is? Oh, okay, that's good. It's not, you know, Aaron Judge's batting average. We wish it was, but it's not. But anyway, so 9/11, I did a bris that morning. I was coming home, and my wife calls me in the car. I was supposed to go to Toronto to speak in Toronto that night. And she says, you can't go to Toronto, all the airports are closed. I said, what does that mean? Why is the airports closed? She said, a plane went in to one of the Twin Towers. Nobody knows if it's an accident or if it's a terror attack. All the airports are closed. Well, of course, I turned on the radio, and that's what everybody's talking about. At that point, there was no panic because nobody could believe that it was a terror attack. Everybody, all the newscasters, wanted to believe that it's an accident. I ran home, I put on the radio, and everybody is so frightened, nobody knows what's happening. So, I don't have a TV, but I went to my neighbor, Joe Jeselnik, not a Jewish fellow. I knocked on the door, I said, Joe, are you aware what's going on? He says, Rabbi, come in, I know what you want to watch. So, he's got the TV on, and we're standing next to each other. You know, how could you sit? You know, we're just standing watching this, the smoke billowing out of the first of the Twin Towers. And then he says to me, Rabbi, don't worry. These buildings will not fall. I said, Joe, how do you know that? He said, you know, I'm in construction. My construction firm was one of these firms that built that building. No, as he says it, we watched the second plane go in. And of course, I don't have to tell you what happened. A couple minutes later, 20 minutes later, both buildings came down. I thought Joe would also faint. I couldn't believe it. But a few hours later, I got a call from a Mrs. Rachel Reifer. Rachel Reifer was the principal of Shevach High School at the time. Were you in Shevach at the time?
I wasn't at the time.
Okay. So Rachel Reifer calls me up. She's the principal. She says, Rabbi Krohn, you got, please, come tomorrow morning and talk to the girls. Give them a Torah perspective of what happened. And I said, what do you mean a Torah perspective? I'm frightened like everybody else. I don't understand. I'm confused and I'm scared. She said, listen, I'm letting the girls out early today. You got to come tomorrow, please. I said, you got to give me a couple of hours. I can't. This is a major thing, because by that time we already knew that it was four planes. One in Pennsylvania, one in Washington, D.C. as well. So I called Rabbonim in Eretz Yisrael and I looked up Svarim and I tried to think about something. And I said, okay, fine, I'll come tomorrow. I called her back. The next day, the world is shattered forever. The world will never, ever, ever be the same since 9/11 until Mashiach comes. All the terrorist attack all over the world, all the security on the planes, it's all from 9/11. Now, after davening, being that she's the principal, she had to speak first. She only spoke 3 minutes. The most that she spoke was 3 minutes. But what she said was so powerful that it has changed me until this very day. And what she said was like this. She said, girls, in every siddur we have Aleinu, and after Aleinu we have V'yalkei Nekava. And look in the siddur, after V'yalkei Nekava we have three psukim that most people don't say. But she says, I want to read you these psukim. And she says like this. Al tiro mipachat pisayim. Do not be afraid of sudden terror, umishoyas rishayim kisavoy, and the calamity of rishayim when it comes. We say to the goyim, Utsu Eitzo Vesufar, you make a plan, it's going to be annulled. Dabru Dova V'lo Yakum, you have an idea, it's not going to have a kiyum, as we said before. Kiyum, kiyimonu keel, because Hashem is with us. And she said, girls, no matter what happens in life, never be so terrified that you're so frightened, because kiyimonu keel, because Hashem is with us. I made up my mind from that talk, that afternoon, from Mincha, I'm going to start saying Al Tira, and I'll try never to miss it. Now, of course, when you start something, you're going to miss a couple times in the beginning. But for years, I haven't missed Al Tira. I said it twice today, by Shacharis and by Mincha, and Mitzvah Hashem by Ma'ariv as well. Fine. I remember more what she said than what I said. Years go by. And those of you who know me personally know that I was very close to my mother. Unfortunately, my mother was an almana for 40 long years. And I was very, very close to her. And then on Chol HaMoed Sukkos, she passed away. We sat Shiva at the end of Yontif. We started right after Yontif, just like we did for my father 40 years earlier, who died in Shmini Atzeres. Thursday night, during the Shiva, Mrs. Reifer came, and I was talking to her. We had a nice conversation. Saturday night, her husband called. Now, I knew him peripherally. I really didn't know him. They lived in Muncie. And I figured that he's calling to be Menachem Avel. And he's crying, and I'm trying to figure out, why is he crying? He didn't know my mother. And he's talking about a woman who died. So he's obviously talking about my mother, but it doesn't make sense. Why is he crying? Then I begin to listen. He's not talking about my mother. He's talking about his wife. Friday night, she was crossing Route 59 in Muncie, and Nebuch, an old man, was driving, and he hit her, and he killed her on the spot. And he was calling to tell me that the next morning, Sunday morning, was going to be a Levaya. That funeral was Gehenim itself. You have never heard kids in high school screaming and crying because they loved her so much. She was cut down in the prime of life. The teachers were crying. The staff was crying. The board was crying. Everyone in the community was so broken because this young woman was just cut down in a terrible car accident Friday night. A couple days later, I get a call that they wanted I should speak about her at the Shleishim in Muncie. That's where she lived. Without exaggeration, there must have been 1,000 women at that Shleishim service. And they were crying before anybody even got up to speak because everybody loved her so much. And I got up and I told everyone the story that I just told you, how she changed my life, how that 3-minute speech made me understand how important it is to say Al Tira after Aleinu every single time we daven. And then I told them, but the third pasuk puzzled me. And if you have a siddur in front of you, take a look at it. And it's very unusual. The third pasuk is the pasuk in Yeshaya. Yeshaya is quoting Hashem. And Hashem says the word I 5 times. I. What is going on here? I'll read the pasuk in Hebrew and then I'll translate. V'ad zikna anihu. V'ad seva aniyasbo. Aniyasisi. V'aniyasa. V'aniyasbo. V'amalei. What is Hashem saying here? You know what Hashem is saying here? You know, take a look in the newspaper. Anytime you see an ad for an iPhone, an iPad, or an iPod, it's always a lowercase I, if you notice it. You know why? Because most people that are I into themselves, they're lowercase personalities. This pasuk wants to show you how to be an uppercase personality. You know what a lowercase personality is? Somebody who says, I need, I want, I crave. Now I'll show you what I is, Hashem says. V'yad zikna, you're going to get old. Don't worry, I'll be there. Anihu, I'll be there. I don't get old. I'll take care of you. V'yad seva, you'll be elderly. Aniyasbol, I'll endure with you. Aniyasisi, I made you. V'aniyasa, I'll carry you. V'aniyasbol, v'amalit, I'll save you. That's what I is all about. I care. I help. I do. And so in my siddur, I have all those anis underlined. Because as you're about to leave the shul, this is the lesson. Life is not about you. Life is what you're going to do for other people. I care. I do. I help. I feel the pain. Save. I'll be there for you. And that's why it's so important to underline. And that's why it's so important. Bli neder. We have to make bli neder, of course, a Kabbalah. From now on, every one of us should say Altira after Aleinu. In many of the girls' schools, they sing it. In boys' schools, they don't even know about it. The only, if you take a look at many Siddurim, it actually says that you're supposed to say Kaddish after Altira. The only place that I ever saw, two places I saw, where the shul automatically says Altira. One shul in Cape Town and Chabad. They're the only ones that I saw that say Altira. But why in the world shouldn't we say it? It's part of the tefillah. And if that's the case, if you underline it, then all of a sudden, the siddur's talking to you and telling you what type of Jew you have to be. That Jew, that's an uppercase personality. I'll tell you something so amazing. Rav Mordechai Schwab was a tremendous tzaddik, the brother of Rav Shimon Schwab. And Rav Zev Smith, a tremendous Talmud Chacham in Brooklyn, who gives many, many shiurim, has many, many CDs on halacha and other topics, he told me he was a Talmud by Rav Mordechai Schwab. So every Chol HaMoed Pesach and every Chol HaMoed Sukkos, he went to visit his Rebbe. The final year of Rav Mordechai Schwab's life, he was very, very ill. And it was after Yom Kippur already. He couldn't go to shul Yom Kippur. And the family called Rabbi Smith and said like this, we know that you come every year, Chol HaMoed Pesach and Chol HaMoed Sukkos. We just want to tell you, we want you to be prepared because he's so pale and he's so frail. So don't be frightened when you see him. Really, you don't have to come. But if you want to come, just don't be frightened. And he told me as much as they tried to prepare him. As soon as he walked into the bedroom where Rav Mordechai Schwab was lying in bed, he was so shocked at how thin and pale and frail his Rebbe had become. Obviously, the shock registered on his face. And Rav Mordechai Schwab was very perceptive. And he looked at his Talmud and he said, Daigene, don't worry, Ichleb Besimcha, I'm living in happiness. And listen to what he said. That's what we were talking about, how an Adam Gadol thinks. He said, Yom Kippur, I couldn't go to shul. And I couldn't daven. You don't think I wanted to go to shul, Yom Kippur, to daven? I didn't make myself sick. Hashem made me sick. So if Hashem made me sick, I'm okay with that. And I'm living, listen to what he said, I'm living Chayim Britzoinoi. Now, that's certainly not the pshat when we daven that in the morning. We say, Kirega ba'apa Chayim Britzoinoi. But he took those two words, Chayim Britzoinoi, and he made a mantra out of it. He made a lifestyle out of it. That no matter what I'm going through in life, if that's what Hashem wanted for me, Chaim, I am living Britzoinoi according to His will. And then he said to Rabbi Smith, I can't learn anymore because when I learn, I get headaches. You don't think that I want to learn? But I didn't give myself the headaches. Hashem did. So if He gave me the headaches and He knows that because of the headaches, I'm not going to be able to learn, I'm living the way He wants. So I'm okay with that. That's amazing. When we go through a difficult time, that doesn't mean it can't change. Anything can change but tefillah. But a person shouldn't be broken. Because you're living right now the way Hashem wants you to live. You're going through a rough time financially, you're going to make it. That's what we said before. Baruch Goyzim Akayim. And then additionally, Chaim B'Tzani, you're living right now the way Hashem wants you to live. And if you can't afford certain things and your friends can't afford it, right now that's what Hashem wants. Again, it doesn't mean it can't change. Anything can change with tefillah. But it's Chaim Ritzonai. And when you underline that, and you're going through a rough time, that's going to give you a confidence not to be broken. So whether it's you're waiting for a shidduch or waiting for a child, a person has to know, this is what Hashem wants right now. I'm okay with that. I'm going to daven so it should change. But I'm not going to get broken because I'm living Chaim Ritzonai. So I want to share with you an amazing story. In Bridgeport, Connecticut today, there's a Rav. His name is Rabbi Mendelson. Rabbi Mendelson, a couple years ago, was his 25th anniversary of school, and they decided to make him a dinner, a banquet, in his honor. And he was able to choose which guest speaker he wanted. So he had been to Milwaukee a little while earlier, and he had heard Rabbi Michal Twersky's son, Rabbi Twersky, who is a psychologist and a great Talmud Chacham. He was very impressed with him, and he called him up. He said, would you be the guest speaker at my dinner? And he said, yeah, of course, and they set the date. So he was going to come from Milwaukee to Newark Airport. Rabbi Mendelson's brother was going to pick him up in Newark and drive him to Bridgeport. Sunday afternoon, it's about 2 o'clock, and Rabbi Mendelson's brother calls him from Newark. He says, I don't know what you're talking about. That there's no Rabbi Twersky on the plane. The whole plane just empty, the one that came from Milwaukee to Newark. He said, what do you mean it's empty? He's supposed to be on that plane. Well, I'll tell you, unless he's going to LaGuardia or something, but he's not here. So Rabbi Mendelson, I'll call him. I've got a cell phone. Now, you know that when I write a story, I always like to try to get as much information as possible, unless Sam Levy's going to correct me. But, you know, like he did last time I was here. But it's okay. It's worth it. But so I called Rabbi Twersky, and he tells me, you know, I'm sitting, I'm giving a shiur. You know, it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And the phone doesn't stop. And every time I put it on decline, again, it's ringing. So I finally picked it up. And Rabbi Mendelson is on the phone. He said, Rabbi Twersky, where are you? He said, what do you mean? I'm giving a shiur here in Milwaukee. What do you mean giving a shiur? You're supposed to be in Bridgeport. Aren't you speaking at my dinner tonight? He said, oh my gosh. I wrote it down for next Sunday. That's terrible. I'm so sorry. And Mendelssohn's gone crazy because he needs a guest speaker. Where's he going to get a guest speaker? I was already busy. No. No. So what happened was, Rabbi Twersky says to him, don't worry, I've got two uncles. They're great people. Avram Twersky and Aaron Twersky, the professor. I'll call one of them and I'll get them to speak. He said, yeah, but I wanted you. I said, I'm telling you, they're smarter than me. They're better than me. It'll be wonderful. Just give me a half hour. I'll get back to you. And he calls his uncle Aaron. And, you know, he begs him, please, I feel so foolish. I made a mistake. I put it down on the wrong day. Please pinch it for me. He said, what am I going to say? Uncle Aaron, please, you're so smart. You'll know what to say. You'll be fine. Okay, I'll do it for you. You're a good nephew. Fine. He calls back Rabbi Mendelson. Aaron Twersky's coming. Okay, Rabbi Mendelson told me he was happy, wasn't thrilled, but he was happy. Fine. Comes to the dinner, and he gives this electrifying speech. He's a genius, of course. He knows law, and he knows halacha, and he combined both of them. It was just beautiful. And he has a beautiful hadras panim, very good-looking person. So after the speech, Rabbi Mendelson goes over to Rabbi Twersky, and he says, you know, maybe it's from the Shemayim that you're here. Because there's a guy in our shul who works in Kirov. He's so devoted to the kids. And Nebuchadnezzar, he has no children himself. But he's so devoted. Maybe you could give him a bracha that he should have children. And Rabbi Twersky says, I really don't believe you're telling me this. He says, call the fellow over. And they call the fellow over. And Rabbi Twersky says, I can't believe that your rabbi just asked me this question to give you a bracha. I want to tell you that yesterday I davened in the Bava of a Beis Medrash. And I heard the Baba Rebbe say something that I never heard about before. And obviously it was meant for you. He said, the Baba Rebbe asked a question. And this is a good question. How come in Shemayin Esrei we ask for everything? There's no bracha for children. No asking that we should have children. We ask for forgiveness, lachlono. We ask for wisdom, v'chonenu. We ask for healing, refa'enu. We ask for panasa, baruch aleinu. Shemak aleinu is like a general bracha. But there's no Klal Yisrael without children. How could there not be a bracha for children? Rav Hutni asked this question also. Many people have thought about this. He said, the Baba Rebbe gave an answer. And the Baba Rebbe said there is a place to daven for children. And you have to see this inside to believe it. It's amazing. And he said like this. The Baba Rebbe said, every day when we say Moedim, these are the words that we say. Mogen Yeshenu. Hashem, you are that one. Mogen, you protect us. Yeshenu, you give us salvation. Atahula Dorado, you're for generations. You do that for us. For generations, you've been saving us and protecting us. Zok, the Heliga Baba Rebbe. You got to put the comma in a different place. This is how you should say it when you're looking for children. And this is what you should remember to tell anyone that's looking for children. This is how you say it. Mogen Yishenu Atahu. You are the one who saves us and brings us salvation. Comma. Lador Vador Noidalachon and Sapati Lasecha. From generation to generation, we're going to sing your praises. And then you say, Hashem. Chazal said that from generation to generation, we should sing your praises. I don't have generations. Give me children. That's what the Baba Rebbe said. You put a comma in a different place and you say to Hashem, Lador Vador Noidalachon and Sapati Lasecha. Well, this guy was so touched. Rabbi Tversky couldn't believe that just the day before he heard this from the Rebbe, and now he told it to him. Fine. And then he left. The next year, the anniversary of the dinner, Rabbi Tversky from Milwaukee, the one who was supposed to come and unfortunately mixed up the days, he calls Rabbi Mendelsohn. He says, you know, it's the anniversary of, you know, when I made that mistake last year. I feel so bad. I know that I apologize to you, but I just want to apologize again that I made that terrible mistake. Rabbi Mendelsohn said, there's no need for apology. I just came from the Bris, where I was the Sandik for that little boy that was born to the fellow in Kirov. Could you imagine that? That's what tefillah is all about. That's what a bracha from a tzaddik is all about. And that's what davening is all about. Davening is understanding what you're saying. And once you understand, and I'm sure that from now on you'll be able to come up with so many, many different things that mean something to you when you daven. And when you daven and you underline it in your siddur becomes your guidepost. Your siddur becomes your best friend. So I want to tell you one more thing, and then we'll review and end with a fabulous, fabulous story. A number of years ago, there was a fellow who came to my home. He was very, very depressed, very sad. It took him a very long time to have a shidduch, to get a shidduch. And then within a few months, the marriage was over, and now he was divorced. And he told me that he went to therapists, and he went to Rabbanim, and he went to so many different people to try to get chizuk, but nobody was able to get him back on track. And then he said one night he was listening to a CD, and a certain rav said this thing. You know, every morning we say in davening, Baruch Ata Hashem she'asa li kol tzarki. Hashem, you have provided all my needs. Does anybody know what you're supposed to have in mind when you say those words, she'asa li kol tzarki? Does anybody know? Shoes, right. Shoes. Why shoes? Shoes is everything? Yeah, because without shoes, you're not leaving your house. You're not going shopping. You're not going to shul. You're not going to learn. You're not going to do bikkur cholim. You can't get out of the house without shoes. That's a simple meaning, she'asa li kol tzarki. So what this fellow told me, he heard on a CD, a certain rav asked a question, and he said, and he told the story, somebody once went to the Rebbe Rav Zisha, and he said, Rav Zisha, what are you thinking when you're saying those words, she'asa li kol tzarki? You don't have shoes. You're so poor you can't afford shoes. You walk around without shoes. So what are you thinking when you say these words, she'asa li kol tzarki? So Rav Zisha says, I'll tell you what I think. You see, it doesn't only mean physical shoes. It's the concept of shoes. For example, if let's say that you have a king who had a beautiful suit, and now he gets tired of wearing it. So he puts it up on the market, he puts it on eBay. I'm sure Rav Zisha didn't say eBay, but you know what I mean. He puts it up, and people want to make an auction, and they're going to buy it. So one guy buys it, and it's a little too big. It's not a problem. You go to the tailor, he takes it in, and it's fine. What if it's too tight? It's no problem. You go to the tailor, he lets it out, and it's fine. Same with the dress. A queen has a dress, and you want to buy this dress, and now she's selling it. If it's too big, you go to the tailor, takes it in, lets it out. It's not a problem. But what if the king is selling his shoes? And the king is a size 7 and you're a size 10. There's nothing that you can do with those shoes. And if the king wears a size 10 and you wear a size 7, it's also, what are you going to do with those shoes? shoes have to be exactly to the measurements of your feet. He said, that's what I'm thinking. Sha'asali kol tzarki. Sha'asali kol tzarki means that everything that happens in my life right now, that's exactly what Hashem wanted it, just like shoes. And that's the same concept that we spoke about before of Chaim Bertzoinai. Sha'asali kol tzarki, that the situation that I find myself in right now, this is exactly what I need. I'll never forget. Zechoshev Arov, who doesn't want that I should mention his name, he told me such a heartbreaking story. He told me that there was a girl who never had cancer. Now she was in remission. And she was constantly crying. And her father said, what can I do for you? Why are you crying? And she said, I want to speak to the Rav. There's something that's bothering me. And she didn't want to tell it to her father because she was afraid he would just make nothing out of it. And she went to this Choshev Rav, a very big Talmud Chacham, a very wise, compassionate person. And listen to what she said. She said, Rebbe, she said, when she had cancer, before it went into remission, she said, I davened to Hashem. I felt so close to Hashem. I was talking to Hashem all day. And then when I went into remission, and now that I'm better, my davening is not the same. And I miss that relationship. That's why I'm crying. I want to feel close to Hashem. Because when I was ill, I felt so close. I was always talking. What a tzidkoniyus. What a wonderful problem. In other words, wonderful in the sense of holiness. Because she still wanted to feel connected. So I remember the Rav was discussing it with me. And I told him what I would have said to the girl. And that life is a test. And Hashem always wants to see how we relate to Him. There's some people that can relate to Hashem in the difficult times because they're always asking and they're always close and they're always begging and they're always thinking how Hashem's going to help them. But then when things are good, they forget about it. And there's some people, it's just the opposite. When things are good, they're very grateful. And things are bad, they figure, Hashem, where are you? And they have no connection. So every situation, test. And that's what the Rav, if I was the Rav that she asked me, that's what I would have told her. That when she had that illness, Hashem was testing her to see if she's still a believer. And then when she was healed and in remission, Hashem wanted to see, are you still going to remember me? And we've spoken about that many, many times. That David HaMelech said, Tzora v'yogay nemtzo, we're going to say it in Halil and Sukkos. But he also said, Koish Yeshua Yisesa, Uvashem Hashem Ekra. That was the godless of David HaMelech. When things were bad, he cried to Hashem, Tzora v'yogay nemtzo, Uvashem Hashem Ekra. But he was also able to say, when he got the shidduch, and he got the job, and he got the house, and he got the raise, Koish Yeshua Yisesa, Uvashem Hashem Ekra. He was able to do that. And that's what tefillah is all about. Always making a connection to Hashem. That making a connection with machshava. And that's what we spoke about in the beginning. That's what tefillah is. Tefillah is filalti machshava. And the Mishnah Berurah tells it to us. It's better to daven less and understand more than to daven more and understand less. Now many, many times we want to keep up with the tzibur. But you don't know what you're talking about. That's not the ultimate davening. The ultimate davening is get an art scroll sitter. Get a mitzvah sitter. I'll tell you what happened in the Philadelphia yeshiva with Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky. Believe it. He was using an art scroll masa once Rosh Hashanah. So a bacher came over to him. It was not nice what he said, but whatever. He felt he could say it to Rav Shmuel. He said, Rosh Hashiva, I hope you don't mind my asking, but is it befitting that a Rosh Hashiva should use like an art scroll masa? You know, with an English taich? So Rav Shmuel showed him v'chol maminim. And he says, excuse me, do you know the meaning of these words? He said, no. So Rav Shmuel says, I also don't know. But when I'm talking to Hashem, I'd like to know what I'm talking about. So really, what really should be done in most shuls and in all shuls, there should be a seder of tefillah before Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. Maybe Asher, you made tshuva, we should just make a study of the Al-Chaitz. After Al-Chaitz, we don't even know what we're talking about. What are you banging about? What'd you do wrong? You don't even know what you did wrong. You don't even know what you're asking forgiveness for. So take a few extra minutes and learn the meaning. That's the machshava, that's the shit. So when we say machayim meisim, now we understand that it's three things. It's food, it's those that are ill, and of course it's v'nemen ata l'hachkis meisim. When we say, of course it means that we shouldn't come onto human beings. But it could also mean that we shouldn't have to have a transplant or a blood transfusion. When we say, underline it, because that's the guidepost for when you're going out into the world. It's not about you. How are you going to help other people? So many broken people, will put your arm around them and make them feel special. Heal the brokenhearted. Let's remember Baruch Goyzer Makayim. That's the Baruch Shema talking to you privately. In your own life, when you're going through whatever you're going through, just remember Goyzer Makayim. That's Chaim Ritzoni, as we said. For whatever reason Hashem wants us to go through it, let's not be broken. It could change with tefillah. But Chaim Ritzoni, or as we said, Baruch Goyzer Makayim. Let's remember to say Altira. Underline those five on these. Know that we should never be frightened, ki monokel, because Hashem is with us. I find it to be such an elevating tefillah. Talk about elevating tefillah. Let's remember V'chein. Underline a V'chein. And think about it. We're going towards the King. We have a great year, hopefully, ahead of us. But we have to go into the King and understand with trepidation, but with confidence, because it's Yom Kippurim. And finally, let's remember how to daven for children. So now I want to end with this magnificent story. Many of you know the wonderful, wonderful therapist. He's a doctor, he's such a sensitive person, Dr. David Belkowitz. He's very involved with Camp Simcha and Chai Lifeline. And of course, I don't know if any of you have ever been to that camp. Mama should break heart. The counselors, they are so devoted and so special to those kids, Nebuch, who have Yena Machla. And the way it works in Camp Simcha today is that the first half of the summer is for girls and they have girl counselors. And then the second half is for boys and they have the boy counselors. So a couple years ago, one of the counselors was at a convention and he told this story. He told the story, Dr. Pelkowitz was there, and I heard him when he told it over at a different type of convention. This fellow was a counselor for the boys. And he was in remission. He too had had cancer, and now he was in remission. And at the end of the summer, somebody wanted to read him a shidduch, one of the girl counselors who was there the first half of the summer, his age, and she was also in remission. And some people said, are you crazy? How could you read a shidduch to two kids like that? You know, it's so dangerous. Who knows what the future could be? And other people said, mind your own business. If they want to get married and build a family, who are you to say anything? He said, and we went out. And we went out, and we got engaged. Now, this boy came from Australia. And now Dr. Pelkowitz is telling the story that he told his scholar that before they get married, he has to go to Australia, settle up some family matters, and then he's going to come back. So now it's about 3 weeks before the wedding, and he goes out with his scholar one night, and she looks wonderful, and everything is fine. And he tells her in 2 nights he's going to go to Australia. I don't know if you ever traveled to Australia. It is an absolute grueling trip. 6 hours from New York to Los Angeles, and then 13 hours from Los Angeles to Melbourne. And while this guy is on the second leg of the trip, his wife suddenly gets so sick and so ill, she's rushed to the hospital, and they are afraid that she's going to die. And they got to get a hold of this chassan, because if he wants to see her one more time before she leaves this world, he's got to come back right away. How in the world are you going to reach this kid? He's on Qantas Airlines on the second leg of the trip from Los Angeles to Melbourne. And they called the travel agent. The travel agent had connections. He gets to the pilot. And he says to the pilot, listen, there's a guy on your flight. And you got to go and you got to tell him that his bride is very sick. And that he can't even get off the plane to go home. As soon as he gets off the plane, you've got to get him back on another plane. And he said, we made the arrangements. There's a ticket waiting for him. And the pilot is frightened himself. He's never had to do this before. He's got to go over to somebody that's sitting on his flight, and he's got to tell him that his bride is dying. Well, he didn't go over himself. He was afraid to, he didn't know what to say. And he sits down together with the steward. They sit on both sides of this young man, and they tell him, they just got a call, a frantic call. He's got to get back to New York. There's going to be 3 officers waiting for him. The second he gets off the plane, that they're going to take him, they're going to get his luggage, get him through customs and immigration, and get him back on the plane from Melbourne to Los Angeles and Los Angeles to New York. Well, when they finally tell him the severity of the thing, of course the kid is crying. He can't stop crying. He just saw his collar. She looked wonderful. He gets off the plane, the officers are waiting. Comes back to Los Angeles, gets back on a plane to New York, and in the New York airport in Kennedy, his family's waiting for him. Of course, they cry, they take a look at him, and it's terrible. And they rush him to the hospital. And he comes into the hospital, and he takes a look at his colleague, can't believe he doesn't recognize her, come on. She's so pale, she's so frail, and he's trying to talk to her. And she's in it and out of it, and he calls his Rebbe. He says, Rebbe, come to the hospital. Marry me. I want to marry her before I die. Please, come to the hospital and marry me. And the Rebbe says, I'll come. I can't promise I'm going to marry you. You can only marry somebody that's coherent. If she's in and out of it, I can't promise you I'm going to marry her. He says, Rebbe, I'm begging you. Please come. Come right now. And the Rebbe says, I'm on my way. The Rebbe comes in. He hugs his kids. They're both crying. And the Rebbe starts talking to the Kala. And she's out of it. She's so weak. Some questions she can't answer. Some questions she can't answer. And he turns to the chassid and he says, I wish I could marry her. I just can't. Malacha, I can't marry her. And this guy goes into the other room. He's absolutely beside himself. He hadn't davened shachris yet. And he starts davening shachris. And he's crying by Rifa'enu. And he's crying by Shema Karleinu. And then he comes to Sim Shalom. Listen how a young man says Sim Shalom. Sim shalim toiv avrocha, chayim chayim v'chesed. And then he comes to this expression, ki be'or panecha, Hashem, you have light in your face. You've given us from the light of your face. Hashem, you have so much light. Take that light. Give it to my kala. Please, I want to marry her. I want to have children. I want to build a family. Take that light, Hashem. Ki be'or panecha, and he's saying it over and over, Hashem, take that light and give it to my kala. And he finally finishes Shemin Esra, and he finishes davening. And he walks slowly into the room where his kala is. He takes a look at her. He can't recognize her. All of a sudden, she's got redness in her face. And she's able to give him a little smile. And he starts talking to her. And he can't believe it. And just as he's about to continue the story, two little kids come running up to the stage, Dr. Pelkowitz said. And they're holding on to this guy's legs. And he picks up the two little children. He says, Rabbeisai, she healed. And we got married. And these are our children. And everybody understood that's what tefillah is all about. Ki ba'ar panecha, whoever thought that that's the pshat in ba'ar panecha. But as Rav David Cohen said, that when the Heilige Chazal, when they were convey our words of tefillah, could have a double and a triple meaning. And because he was filolti, because he had machshava, because he understood what light is all about. And he prayed that his kala should have light. She did have light. And now Baruch Hashem, they're married with children. And that's what we have to hope for. And that's what we have to have the confidence for. We're coming to a period of time that we're going to spend so much time in shul. And so much time davening, even for those who can't make it to shul. Rosh Hashanah, Shabbos, right afterwards, Yom Kippur, Aseret Yemei Tshuva, Til Hashanah Rabbah. Hashem should help that each and every one of us should make a dogosh chazak, a strong concentration on what tefillah is all about. To learn the meanings, to daven less, but to know more. But more than anything else, make that connection to Hashem so that He should give us a good year, a gesund year. Brochais, nechomais, yeshuais, venachomais. Thank you for inviting me, and thank you for listening.
I apologize that I didn't thank you.
One second.